The agenda is a little fluid, partly because I don't know exactly when or even if Kurt is going to be able to join us for the call. The odds are good that he's going to be able to join, but I don't know exactly when. So we'll sort of proceed, and when Kurt joins the call, we'll sort of break away from whatever we're doing and visit with him. I'd like to encourage everybody to please mute. We have a lot of folks on the call, and we're getting a fair amount of background noise. So if you're on but not muted, please do. So the agenda is we'll take a look at DAG 4. I must have been hallucinating when I thought that the DAG 4 was going to be out last Friday. It's not due out until today, so we don't have the language, and we may just want to defer this conversation till the next call, but we'll see how much Kurt can share with us if and when he joins us. And then I proposed a listening session around the formerly MMA, now CAM proposal. And that's what's up on the screen at the moment. I just got another proposal via email from Ken Stubbs, and if we have time, we might want to breeze through that one fairly quickly as well.
And Brian Q. I forwarded that on behalf of Brian Q, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Thanks, Ken, for clarifying that. And then I developed a short starter kit list of harms because the conversation at the last call sort of revolved around that, and I went hunting for a list and couldn't find one, so I thought we'd spend a few minutes reviewing that and adding any obvious ones that I missed, and then any other business. Is there anything that either people are uncomfortable with or would like to add to this agenda? Okay. Glenn, why don't you call the roll, and then we'll get started.
I'll do that with pleasure, Mikey. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the Vertical Integration Call on Monday, the 31st of May. And on the call, we have Mikey O'Connor, Sebastian Bachelot, Richard Tindall has not been reached yet, Cheryl Langdonor, Volker Greimann, Michele Nilon, Barry Cobb, Brian Cute, Ron Andrews, Phil Buckingham, Tero Mustala, Alan Greenberg, Catherine Olmer, Thomas Barrett, Michael Pelage, Ken Stubbs, Jarko Ruska, and Jeff Eckhaus. And for staff, we have David Olive, Marika Koenigs, Mike Zupka, and Glenn de Saint-Jerry, myself. Have I left off anyone? Over to you, Mikey. Thank you. Yes, I've left off Roberto Gaetano, didn't I? And Roberto is on mute.
On mute.
Thank you.
I couldn't tell you.
Good. Okay. Well, welcome all, especially those of you taking time off from the holiday weekend. And until Kurt joins, I think what we'll do is work our way through the two updated proposals that we've got. Brian, Ken, are you comfortable with that, or would you rather just remain out of the spotlight today? I sort of put you on the spot with that idea and didn't mean to.
Mikey, this is Brian. I'm happy to walk through the proposal and have any discussion folks want to have.
Terrific. Okay. Well, why don't we spend about a half an hour on the CAM proposal and then about a half an hour on the one that you just submitted, Brian, and about 15 minutes on harms, and then if Kurt joins, we'll break away and maybe spend 15 minutes with Kurt and we'll call it a day. So here's what I'd like to do. I've got the CAM proposal up there in the middle of the room, and hopefully you all can scroll about in it. I've sort of run out of screen space. What I would like to do is the same sort of ground rules that we had at the last call, where this is not a challenge and response session. This is a session where that's really designed to provide the folks who wrote the proposal, in this case Michael, Milton, and Avery, with feedback. And so Michael is on the call and can answer clarifying questions, but I don't want to get into a debate. I just want to capture in sales speak what we used to call objections and concerns, so that the drafters of the proposal can get some feedback on their proposal and perhaps incorporate those thoughts into a subsequent draft. And so I'm hoping that folks have had a chance to read this proposal and can share with us things that concern them about it, or things that they would like to propose, which, if incorporated, would make them comfortable enough to perhaps be able to support it. Because we are getting pretty close to the wire here, people. The deadline that we've established for a tentative deal, at least the rough outlines of a deal, is the next call, Thursday. And so we really need to bear down and see if we can get there. Roberto and I were speaking about that a little bit before the call and thought that there's likely to be a lot of conversation between now and Thursday. And anything that we can do to facilitate that conversation is what we are trying to get accomplished today. Now,
so Mikey, this is Mike. If you want, maybe I could perhaps to
speed up this discussion, and I don't think we'll need a whole half hour, but to speed it up, perhaps I could just highlight the evolutionary differences from the original MMA proposal to this current CAM proposal. And again, those the changes we made actually were in response to the initial feedback. So what we've tried to do is be reiterative in our thinking and take the feedback. So, you know, perhaps let me just jump in and highlight at a high level some of those evolutionary changes in response to feedbacks and see whether people think it was a good thing, a bad thing, or I think that may, instead of requiring them to read through the whole document, this may spur discussion and make it a little more interactive. That's what I would propose.
That's fine. Why don't you try and, you know, hit it pretty briefly, because I really want this to be mostly about the views of other folks. But
yep, I will keep it. I'll keep it to 2 minutes. So
okay,
I'll keep it to 2 minutes. The original MMA proposal relied heavily on competition authorities to handle matters which we thought were outside of ICANN's limited scope as a technical coordinating body. Now, and what we tried to do in that initial proposal was point to different mechanisms within the U.S. Department of Justice and other mechanisms that might be available to facilitate this. Now, the concern from those participants, a number of the group members, were that this might overwhelm competition authorities, or that competition authorities were not properly suited to handle the influx of hundreds of applications, and that things might get lost. So in response to what we thought was very valid and legitimate concerns, we went back and what we proposed is, if you will, a competition standing committee. Now, standing committees are something that are already recognized within the existing ICANN governance structure or organizational structure. For example, there is a standing technical committee that will evaluate the stability and security concerns of new registry service requests. So this is a panel of, I believe, 20-some experts that are paid an annual retainer to be on call should ICANN have any technical questions regarding the stability security of proposed registry RSTEP proposals submitted by registry operators. And this panel will also, I believe, have a role in connection with the new GTLD process as well, if there's an extended technical evaluation. So looking to build on that, we thought if ICANN is outsourcing this responsibility, the technical responsibilities to technical experts, would it not be prudent for them to outsource this to a standing body of economists to handle these determinations? And it was interesting because ICANN recently just provided guidance on how they handle competition analysis right now in connection with the existing funnel request. And ICANN has said, here are a list of questions, and we sometimes consult with outside legal counsel to make these determinations. So we think that this proposed standing committee not only has utility in connection with the new GTLD process, but also provides a basis into a much more predictable authoritative decision in connection with funnel requests, which impact all registry operators. So that
so Michael,
is, I think, yes.
Michael, I'm going to interrupt you. Kurt has joined the call.
Okay.
And I know that Kurt's time is short today for a bunch of reasons, and so what I want to do is sort of take the priority interrupt. And
Please do.
And
I'm done.
Well, no, this is Kurt. Let Mike finish. It's fine. Okay, I'm going to follow up.
You're at a higher pay grade, Kurt, so please take the floor.
But I wanted to hear your idea anyway about the economist.
Okay. If you want, you could read it. I'm sure most of the people on the call want to hear you speak as opposed to basically what we're looking to do is leverage, create a standing committee of economists, not unlike the technical standing committee, to allow ICANN to remove itself from matters that are outside of its core mandate, and we believe that this actually also provides a scalability in connection with the JN squared proposal, because the JN squared proposal talked about how after 18 months that ICANN might begin to make exceptions on different applications for vertical integration or cross ownership. We believe that this panel provides the mechanism to do that today, as opposed to having to wait 18 months. So, again, that's it at a high level. And if you want, Kurt, I'm sure Mikey or myself could forward to you the most recent proposal. And I think they now want to hear about the DAG 4. So,
Kurt, this is Mikey. Let me just sort of prepare the way for you. Partly, this is my mistake because I don't know where I got the idea that the DAG 4 was due out last Friday, and so my thought was that we would have had it, would have seen the language, and then could have asked you questions about the language. But because I was hallucinating or something, and in fact the document isn't due out until today, this sacrifice that you're making of your time on a holiday may not be in the right sequence. And so if you can sort of sketch out the highlights of what's in the vertical integration session of the draft, I'm sure that people would be all ears, but if you would prefer to wait, let the document come out at its own speed, and join us on the next one, that's certainly fine with me. This was pretty much my error, and I want to give you a big door out if you want it.
Yeah, well, certainly, thanks, Mike. But certainly, you know, my so-called sacrifice is much less than everybody else's on this call. Especially the Americans who are working today, but if you're not American, then you're probably in some weird time zone and making some other form of sacrifice. So, the guidebook's got to be published, and in fact, I'm driving into work now. So again, not that much of a sacrifice to be on the phone. We had hoped to publish it earlier in the weekend, but as you know, it can always be made better, as those of you who have read past guidebooks and the associated documentation know. So we took advantage of the weekend to try to get the English right, the links right, all that stuff right. So the vertical integration language is found in two places. One is in Section 1, who can apply, and two is in the contract, as it is in the current contract. The implementation essentially follows the board resolution. You'll see some nuance in order to make it clear. So the attempt in the any changes or departure from the language of the board was to try to make it clear. So if in your reading it's not clear to you, that'd be an excellent, you know, what this means is an excellent question, because it means it's not clear. There's language in there, you know, sort of a preamble in one case, I think a footnote in the other, that indicates that you know, this is intended to be a default position pending the outcome of your work, that, you know, the default position will in fact be implemented, but was intended and written so that it would not get in the way of any conclusion that this group came to. In other words, this group came to a certain conclusion and it was hard to undo what had already been done, the board thought that would be a bad result. So the default position, as you can imagine, by the way it's written, was written partially so that your work wouldn't have to undo anything that would be difficult. So that's essentially my whole speech. I'm willing to take questions.
Thanks, Kurt. Questions from the group. I'll keep an eye on the queue and sort of call on folks. But as I said, this was primarily my screw up. I goofed up the timing, and so we may just want to wait until the language hits later today, and then we'll go from there. Alan, go ahead. Alan, you may be on mute.
There's been some discussion on whether the staff interpretation will be whether zero means really zero. That is, a registry owning three shares of a registrar or vice versa in a publicly traded thing is technically has more than 0%. Is there a threshold of where zero starts?
Yeah, so that's the question that we tried to answer really clearly in the language. So read that and call me back when it's still not clear to you, but I think it's a lot clearer. Then you can, Alan and everybody can understand why I'm not just reading it. I tell you the truth, in this group, I feel fine reading it, you know, a few hours in advance of its posting, but there's the angel, you know, the person on the other shoulder that's saying, just play it straight. So.
Yeah. No, and actually, as a co-chair, I agree with you, Kurt. I think that is much cleaner. Any other questions like that for Kurt before we let him go back to A, vacation, and B, work?
So, Kurt, what time does ICANN anticipate hitting the update button so that we can read this stuff? In between barbecuing.
It's like painting your house, right? You figure out how long it's going to take and multiply by three. All the documents, with the exception of one or two that are completely done, are posted on a trial website, and then that's just internal to ICANN. And then, it's all about laying it out and moving around, writing the right preambles, one set of words that everybody reads, and coordinating the activities of some people that are in the office and some people are outside the office. So, I hope for late this afternoon, but could always be the worst case thing,
So 5 p.m. Pacific time in a good case scenario, 8 o'clock in a worst case. There you go.
Hour after 8 o'clock, but then, my wife will be really angry with me and a whole lot of other things.
All right. Thanks, Kurt.
And we had an intention to try to get this done on Friday and realized about 8 or 9 o'clock Friday night it wasn't going to happen. There's probably this tiny bit of lack of urgency because we knew we had a few more days. So if you had heard Friday, it probably came from the staff saying our goal is to publish it on Friday, so I'm not so sure they're going to screw up anyway. Okay, well, that's all right with you guys. I'll just listen for a while.
Mikey, you there? Maybe.
Oops, sorry, mute button. Hey, Kurt, many, many thanks, and we'll take a look at the draft, and again, really appreciate you joining us. And with that, Michael, back to you. You've got the floor.
Okay. I think I really covered the main concept. I mean, we put back in a 15% there. Personally, we went back and forth. We were originally starting with zero with the board resolution, but in the interest of compromise, since everybody else seemed to like 15% we figured, okay, we can throw that in there. But, you know, that's it. I mean, that's,
okay. Well, folks, any thoughts, concerns, objections, things that could be done to tweak this proposal to be getting closer to something that, while you may not like it, you could live with? Because really what our goal is now is to try to get to some language that we could carry forward into Brussels to the council, to the board, for feedback. It's not a final because we have some time after Brussels to tune up the super details, but we do have a need to get something pulled together, and I'm looking for thoughts as to how to make this better. Barry, go ahead.
Hi, this is Barry. Thank you, Mikey. I'd really just like to pose a question to the group with the slight modifications of the CAM proposal. If we can isolate the competition authority part for just a moment, which, you know, I think I personally could support. It definitely gives this some legs. But is it a fair statement, again, isolating the competition authority part, a fair statement that this really much closer aligns for the proposals? And those fours would be the CAM, the JN squared, the PIR updated, and Afilias. I'm sure there are some slight nuances, but overall, is it a fair statement that those four are very closely aligned with kind of a master proposal, if you will, or a single proposal, that we can start to consolidate those into one? Thank you.
I saw Jeff Eckhouse's hand go up, and since he's one of the proposers, Jeff, are you responding to Barry's question?
Yeah, actually, if you don't mind, I could actually quickly respond to that. Is that what I think the difference is? I think they are somewhat getting to an alignment. The difference is in the JN2 and the updated CAM, both of which I actually have been, you know, starting to get behind, is that it allows all parties to enter into the mix and has a path forward for them, versus the PIR and the affiliates proposals are permanent restrictions on certain parties, on parties to enter in. So that's, I think, the main difference. But they are starting to coalesce, is that, and that's the difference, is the JN2 and the CAM have a path forward and a way towards co-ownership and vertical integration in the future, while the others do not.
Thanks, Jeff. Anybody else, before we take, Alan, you're next in the queue. Does anybody else from any of the other proposals want to respond to Barry's question about the convergence that's going on? Okay. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a comment on the CAM proposal. I guess the largest objection I have to it is, although we skirted around the discussion a little bit when we had the economists online, and perhaps a few other times, we haven't defined what the market is. And there was some question about, is the market the entire TLD market in the world? Is it the gTLD market? Or is it a market which is far better defined than that? There are some people who believe that, particularly for any new TLDs that are successful, they are effectively a monopoly within their own world. Certainly once they're launched and successful, they're a monopoly. And until we define what market are we talking about, simply handing it over to a team of economists or to competition authorities to make their own judgment on it, I don't believe is ICANN taking responsible action for the namespace.
Alan, this is Mikey. What would your, of those choices that you rattled off, what would your favorite flavor be?
My favorite is, I believe that there will be names which will effectively be monopolies, and names that are, that from a competition point of view, once they're established, will not be a generic TLD that is equivalent to everyone else, and therefore it's the denominator in the percentage that's the issue. You know, 60% of a market varies heavily depending on what market you're talking about. And
could you conceive of a way to drive that kind of concept into some language that could be inserted into one of these proposals?
Well, I think it's more than inserted in the proposal. I think it's ICANN has to decide that that is indeed the definition that we're using. I'm not an economist. Whether I could, with a couple of other people's help, come up with some words, perhaps. But I'm highlighting the focus that simply saying economists will decide, whether they're government ones or not, will decide on whether there is competition or not, depends on what the scope of the overall market is. And there is not agreement among us.
So can I respond to that, Mikey?
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
Thanks,
Michael.
So, Mike Palach here. So Alan, I wholeheartedly agree with you that ICANN needs to do some more work in this area, and it's my understanding that as part of the collateral material that will be released in connection with the upcoming Brussels meeting, that there will be sort of part one of an updated economist study that ICANN has retained another set of people to do more studies, and I think they're looking at this broader market analysis or market question. So as far as does ICANN need to do more work, yes, I don't think they have undertaken that market analysis looking at both the G's and the C's and the tire market. So I am in full agreement with you there. You will also notice in the CAM proposal that one of the things that we propose as part of the outreach in ascertaining the relevant questions and data points is to basically for ICANN to interact with the GAC and for the GAC to go back to those competition authorities within those respective countries to perhaps solicit input and feedback. Because at the end of the day, it really is the competition authorities, because independent of what ICANN does, if a competition authority feels that commerce is being conducted in its economy or in its jurisdiction that is having an adverse impact, they will take action. So this is one of the reasons why we thought it was important to throw the biggest net out as possible to get these data points so that in constructing a framework for ICANN economists or the standing committee to make its initial determination, they would have the best set of data points out there as opposed to only a subset that might lead to perhaps false negatives or false positives.
Mikey, can I get a response?
Sure, go ahead, and then I've got an idea for you.
Yeah, two quick points. Like many of the discussions over the last week, this is part of a mosaic. And to say we need to discuss these things is true, but to say we need to discuss it after we've agreed that this is the right proposal, I could not support. I think it's one of the critical things, whether it makes this a viable proposal or not. And number two, you say competition authorities will act if they decide it's necessary, but they act only in one direction. They will act to stop something if they feel there's a harm. If their inclination, as indicated by my first comment, is too liberal an approach, they're not going to take any action. So
that's correct, that is the concept here. Is if there is no harm, right, they will take no action, and if they take no action, the proposal will go forward.
But their definition of harm may be different depending on what they view the size of the market is. That was the issue.
Hang on, guys. Here's my thought, and I'm going to cast myself back into the other policymaking realm that I sit in. It doesn't sound like there's tremendous disagreement necessarily here. What there is the need for some language so that we've got something in front of us that we can then hammer on. And so And I think Cheryl may have brought that same point up in the chat.
Mikey, this is Brian. I'm not online. Can I get my hand up?
Sure. Go ahead. Jump right in, Brian. Sorry, I didn't realize
okay.
you weren't on the adult.
Thank you. Michael, I know that you've looked at this very closely and you know this material as well as anybody on the phone here. The original proposal, I believe one of the reasons or the impulses for a referral mechanism to DOJ or DG Competition or any of the antitrust authorities was that ICANN really isn't the best. Well, if ICANN is to engage in defining markets, to engage in calculating market share, to taking action based on those analyses, it's putting itself into some questionable water and potentially setting itself up for lawsuits from impacted parties, from scrutiny from governments who feel they're trying to expand their role into competition matters. So if I read that right, then my question with the modified proposal is, when you say standing committee, can you put a little meat on that? Because what I'm trying to sort out is, where is the decision, where is the analysis made? And it sounds like with this outside group, are they literally going to be outside consultants, or might they be part of a standing committee and then part of the ICANN structure? And I think there's a difference there. And whatever their conclusions or analyses are, would a natural course be that ICANN then accepts and takes action on those? And would that open ICANN to any of the concerns that you guys were trying to address in your first version? I hope all that was clear.
I think so. And so let me step back a couple levels in answering that. Earlier last month, I specifically asked ICANN for documentation in how they conduct an analysis of the current funnel. So right now, there are 15 GTLD contracts that have language in there saying that when a registry proposes a new service, ICANN will conduct a preliminary competition analysis. What we were looking at is, well, what is ICANN really doing there? Now, ICANN has posted information on how they evaluate market and this, that, and the other thing. They provide the initial sort of quick look analysis that they do. And at the bottom of that document, there was a little asterisk that says ICANN will sometimes contract with outside legal counsel in making these determinations. So we kind of looked what was already in place, and we kind of felt uncomfortable that ICANN staff, as well as its outside legal counsel that may be eventually defending itself in an antitrust litigation, might be making these preliminary determinations. So what we were looking for with this standing committee was to, I think, insulate the organization from that and make this a truly independent sort of standing committee. I really don't want ICANN staff on it or sort of any cross-pollinization. And that kind of happens right now in the security and stability. In the RSTEP standing panel, there are some people from SAC and some other people that are cross-pollinated. We think it would be best to have this truly, isolated. Now, as far as the powers that they would have, and Milton was very concerned about this, he did not want them making any determinations as to there was a violation of this or that, but that there was the potential sort of that there were some concerns that really needed to be looked at. And the idea here was instead it, from an effective standpoint, if ICANN was just throwing 400 requests out to competition authorities, there was a fear that this may overwhelm them and may fall through the cracks. So the idea of putting this sort of speed bump here was to truly identify the much more problematic concerns and make sure that those got to the appropriate people. So that was the intent here. And again, as far as coming up with the criteria that this independent panel would use, part of that mosaic that Alan talks about was interaction with the GAC so that they would reach out to their competition authorities to make sure that we were dealing with the appropriate metrics. Does that answer your question?
That, That helps a lot. Thanks for clarifying.
I think what I'd like to do is draw this little piece of what I think is very useful and constructive conversation to a close by doling out an action item to somebody or somebodies to craft a paragraph that at least captures the issue. I think it's perfectly all right for us to have language in our hopefully proposal to Brussels that says that there are some narrowly defined areas that need more work, but that if these if the broad strokes of our proposal are acceptable, then we would go back to work after Brussels and finish those off. And I'm wondering if this is of that nature, and if so, if somebody would be willing to step up and sort of chair a little subgroup to draft a paragraph or two that could be put in front of the folks on the list. Because I don't think that we're going to get all the way to the very end of every issue before Brussels, but if we can paint a picture of a broad outline of a path, I think that that is a good response to the request that the board has made and that is apparently going to be in the DAG, that we can show them that we're getting there, that we have the broad strokes of an approach, and we have some things yet to work out. I'm not hearing any objection to that. I'm also not seeing any volunteers. Michael, since you're on the hot seat, could you take the action to at least maybe you, Milton, and Avery, when you listen to the MP3, see if you could come up with a chunk of language that could get inserted into your proposal that would address that issue?
Okay, I'll go back and I'll listen to the MP3 recording. But what is the specific issue as far as the competition authorities? Or
well, the underlying concern that I think Alan kicked us off with was, what's the definition of the market? You know, how broadly defined is it? You know, could it be as narrow as a single TLD? Could it be all GTLDs? Could it be all TLDs? And no, to paraphrase his concern, he's uncomfortable putting his thumbprint on something until we at least have a sense of what we're talking about there.
I'll go back and I'll talk with Avery and Milton whether we find agreement among ourselves. I don't know if that's possible. At times, the consensus building process among the three of us at times is interesting, to say the least. So I'll go back and I will see if we're in agreement on, you know, how the market's is defined. I think you know, our approach has been, everything that we've done with the original MMA proposal as well as the CAM proposal is to provide some flexibility so that when the final mosaic comes into place, there's that ability to fit in. So again, to address I think Alan's concerns, this is not a proposal where we're necessarily advocating a solution. We're just saying that this is a construct that may fit in the place when the final pieces come together. So I think that may be a little different because, again, this is a proposal not really advanced by a group that is proposing to offer a new GTLD or anything like it. This is really not a provider-centric proposal. This is more an overlay that we think could fit when certain other pieces come into play. So I'll talk to Avery and Milton about that and try to get back to you. Okay?
Well, and Michael, I'm not sure that you necessarily have to arrive at a choice between those options. I think the language could just describe the issue and describe a mechanism whereby it could be addressed, but not necessarily, you know, in keeping with your overlay notion. Maybe if there's a good mechanism to make choices about that, because I can imagine a situation where it varies from one circumstance to another. And just like the proposal of an external committee, a standing committee is a mechanism but not necessarily a predeterminer of outcomes, maybe there's a mechanism that could be described to address that issue and the sort of series of issues that fell out of it. Anyway.
All right.
Give it a whirl and see if you can come up with anything. I think it would help us a good deal if you could.
We'll do.
Let's see. Oh, I'm finally catching up on the chat. I'm unable to I'm unable to summarize it because I haven't been reading it. Cheryl, go ahead.
Mikey, sorry about that. That's why I put my hand up.
Yeah, thank you.
I just think it's pretty important, particularly when you're running with so many people not online.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Some are just on the telephone bridge. If we're referring to things that are going on to chat, to punctuate occasionally and just cover for everyone, and of course the record on the MP3 of what is happening in the chat could be a very good idea. So while you get up to speed on that, because that's kind of your job, Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that those of us who may not be sitting in front of a screen reading the thrill-packed and exciting chat and tete-a-tete that's going on, that Jonathan Altenfrags also said he would be happy to volunteer to participate in this sub-team activity. And that, of course, we've also been looking at, we've been using words like measurements, working hypothesis, you know, agreed, assumed definitions, those sorts of things need to be brought into the conversation. And perhaps you also need to call for any of the people who are just on the audio bridge to make some specific contributions. And now I will take my croaky voice and put it away.
Oh, your poor voice. Well, thank you for that. And it is hard to summarize this chat. The term paperclip gets in there in an unusual way. I guess it's not supposed to summarize.
Not all parts need summarizing.
I see. let's see. So anyway, Jonathan, maybe you and Michael Palage can touch bases on some of that drafting. And I'm hopelessly over my... I will strive to read the chat a little bit more, although the paperclip thread sort of threw me off and I didn't come back after that. I'm sorry. So if there's any major points that come up in the chat...
Cheryl here, just while I'm... And I'm going to stop suffering soon, so that'll help you all stop suffering as well. With the archive and the confusion that anyone listening to it will be fascinated with the paperclip reference, so I think we need to close these loops, stop being such a tease, Mr. Chairman. The interaction that was going on in the chat regarding paperclip, etc., was all about how one can be necessarily in a planning and prospective stage maybe unaware of harm or where harm can happen. One of the chatters suggested, of course, you know, you could do harm to someone with a paperclip, but does that mean a paperclip is inherently harmful? And that was the tone of the conversation. So it really comes back to matters of some established definitions, some working hypotheses, some what does market mean, and it isn't quite so flippant and confusing as you know. I think one of the lines to quote Jonathan, if I'm going to do a summation for you, Mr. Chairman, is suggesting that he was saying, well, perhaps we're looking for asbestos as opposed to paper clips. So from that type of concept, I think what you're hearing from the chat space is a very high desire and need to establish some delimiters and some agreed terms for at least a working hypothesis.
So,
thank you.
thanks, Cheryl. I apologize for being so lame. I have never been able to keep up with the chat in these meetings, so I'm not a good summarizer. But it does seem to me that this is good feedback for all proposal writers and advocates, and that it would be useful if proposal advocates could include those working hypotheses in your proposal. And I think it might also be useful to sort of come up with a list of the words that have caused us the most trouble. Barry, I'm going to put you on the spot for a minute, so I'm giving you advance warning so you can take yourself off mute. But in the pile of stuff that went around earlier, it's my recollection that we came up with a list of terms that needed defining. And maybe what we ought to do is publish that list to the working group list as sort of a tip sheet for proposal advocates.
Mike, is Margie on the call? Because I thought we already did this.
Margie's not on the call. It's just me. That's part of the reason that everything's so lame today, is because I'm kind of out of here on my own. But I think you're right. I think we did do this before, and I'm just trying to track down the definitive list, because there was a lot of work done during the chartering process, and then there was a list of terms to be defined. And I think that the list that Margie had was somewhat shorter than the list that Barry was working off of. That's part of the reason that I sort of put him on the spot.
Yes, Mikey, this is Barry.
Go ahead.
So just to clarify, the drafting team only really started out defining three terms as what cross-ownership, vertical integration, and I believe one other term, and then that got sidelined. I think what Margie put together was more a list of acronyms and not so much necessarily a full definition list. And then thirdly is in our attempt at a sub-team for the analysis portion, I appended a list of terms that don't have definitions for them, and so I'll publish that list out to the list, and then we can chomp on that.
That's the one I was thinking of, Barry. Thank you, sir. That it's that longer list that you developed that I was thinking would be good, and this could be sort of a tip sheet for folks who are doing proposals. We're drawing sort of to the end of the time for the CAM proposal, and I would like to switch over to the one that Brian has sent, if that's all right with folks. Speak now, or I'll make the CAM proposal go away. All right, so I'm going to make that one go away and share a different document. This one is here.
While you're typing, can I ask a basic technical question? I'm sitting here looking at the screen, and the entire workspace only occupies half of my screen. Is that because you've limited the size of the workspace as to what will display on the user's screen, or is there some button somewhere on the screen that I need to go to enlarge it? I am sorry, folks, for taking time here.
Ken, if you change the size of the window, the useful part within it changes in a seemingly random and not completely controllable way, but sometimes it gets better.
Thank you. I think this is Mikey. I will chime in right behind Alan. I've fiddled around with this at times when nobody was on the chat on the Adobe Connect with me, just to sort of see how it behaves. And I think that what's going on is sort of a compromise between people, the needs of people with big screens and the needs of people with small screens. And so this
well,
is sort of
I know it sounds crazy, but I begin to feel like poor Amadeo did about 10 years ago, those of you who knew him then, where you had to put the screen about 2 inches from your eyes to be able to read even the chat part. So hopefully somewhere down the road they're going to make it a little easier on us. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, you bet. Okay. The proposal that Brian emailed the list just before the call, and Ken did for Brian, is now on the screen. Brian, do you want to do as Mike did and just take us through sort of the highlights of the changes, or shall I just throw it open to the group for questions? How do you want to go?
I'm happy to walk through a little bit, Mikey, and I people just received it, so they may have not had a chance to read it. I'll spend a bit of time to walk through it and identify the changes. The proposal, and I don't have it on screen in front of me, so if I go off course and it's not matching up, I'm sure you'll let me know instantly. The fundamental elements of the proposal are it would allow for cross-ownership between a registry operator and a registrar up to 15%. So a registry operator could own up to 15% of a registrar and vice versa. Likewise, it would allow cross-ownership between a back-end registry services provider and a registrar up to 15% in both directions. We also have Recommendation 19 noted in there, which requires registries to use ICANN-accredited registrars. And we have, importantly, some definitions of affiliate and control, which actually, to be to give credit where credit's due, was taken from Jeff Newman's definitional suite, which essentially are there that if you're going to have ownership caps, obviously, you don't want to have workarounds, backdoors, corporate structures that can otherwise subvert the mechanism that's being in place. And so the definition of affiliate and control, and really control is the key word, are part of the proposal to serve that purpose. But one of the changes from the last iteration is that the more we looked, and there's a number of signatories to the document, but the more we looked at the proposed exceptions, and, you know, affiliates had put some forward in its earliest iteration, the less convinced we were that any of the exceptions had really been developed enough, that they were ripe enough, that the rules of the road for the respective exception were clear enough for an applicant and for enforcement purposes for ICANN. So we felt at this time, and looking at the grid, that these more minimal points are the ones that seem clearest, that seem closest to having agreement, and that's one of the motivations for the proposal as it's structured. I'm just going to make 3 points, and then I'll open it to questions with regard to the motivation. We think, number one, allowing for cross-ownership up to 15% does allow for investment between registries and registrars, back-end providers and registrars. Investment is important, particularly in a new round, having funding, financing, shareholders who can back your proposal as an applicant or your operations as a registrar is important. So that's one motivation. The second motivation is one that we've been speaking to for a long time now. And I'll be honest, I've kept any discussion from us about the policy against access to registry data by a registrar out of our prior conversations for in the interest of getting negotiations going, of getting consensus. But it really is one of our solid motivations that by having ownership caps to prevent the commingling of registry data with registrars is very important policy that needs to be continued. An underlying assumption of vertical integration from a competition law perspective, one of the underlying assumptions is that the efficiencies gained and some of the costs that are eliminated by allowing vertical integration will flow to the benefit of the consumer. And while we have made these arguments in the past from a consumer protection perspective, there is a competition tie-in here, because if there is access to registry data, as data that shows more broadly all registrars doing lookups of domain names, which domain names are looked up more frequently, you will see prices go up in the marketplace as a result. So there is a competition founding in our motivation, which is augmented by all of the arguments we've made about consumer protection and how names can be made unavailable, more valuable names can be more efficiently identified with access to registry data, and prices will go up. Names will be taken off the market for the benefit of the integrated company. So that's motivation number two. And just more recently, in having conversations, looking at JN Squared, looking at Jeff Eckhouse's proposal, we really strongly believe that if you're going to allow integration on the back end, we've said from day one, the back end represents access to registry data. That's a fact. We don't believe that the enforcement will or capability of ICANN is sufficient when you have 100 creds or more that are controlled by an entity, a multitude of resellers. You can have a prohibition on selling in the TLD for the registrar. You can have a promise from the registrar to not do that. But the ability to police and enforce is critical at the end of the day, and we are very, very certain that the ability to enforce just won't be there. The creativity, the gaming is just too, the track record is such that, the registrar can really come up with some creative ways to provision their services through a number of different channels, and ICANN just isn't up to the job of enforcing that. So those are the three motivations behind the proposal. I know I've gone on a bit long, but wanted to be fulsome there, and I'm happy to take questions.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Before I open it up to the floor, a question for you, and really this is aimed at all proposal advocates, and that is, can you see a way where, or do you see any barriers to integrating your proposal with the CAM proposal? Do those mesh? Are there points that are just completely incompatible? What's your sense of that? I realize it's tough since you're in the car and you haven't been able to.
I'm sorry about the noise. The honest answer is I'd like to look through the CAM proposal point by point before I answer that. I'm sure there's areas where there's meshing, Mikey. But before I went on the record and said specifically X, Y, or Z, I'd have to go through it. I'm happy to come back with that on the next call if you'd like to put that for Thursday.
Okay. Concerns, questions, objections for Brian from the group. Yeah, I'm not being overwhelmed. Alan?
I don't have one of those, but I'll have one of the reasons that some of what Brian said strikes a chord with me, and that is the inability of ICANN, especially in the future that we're looking at with perhaps many TLDs, to enforce and to monitor it. And the issue of resellers, I think, is critical. My understanding is several of the registrars have something like 30,000 resellers. We're not just talking about hundreds. And how one can monitor that is not at all clear. Resellers, in fact, can deal with multiple registrars. You can be a reseller for several registrars at the same time. It becomes a very complex process, and I don't think ICANN has the ability, the will, or the staff to really try to enforce things at that level. So I'm not saying there aren't alternatives, but that does strike a chord.
Thanks, Alan. Jeffrey? Got his hand up. Go ahead, Jeff Echo.
Thanks. I just needed to get off mute. Just one thing I wanted to point out. I think I sent this in a previous email a week or two ago, is just to be clear that as of right now, even with 15% ownership and the current contracts that we have, that a registry at this point even can purchase as many names as they want in their own TLD, as long as they go through an ICANN-accredited registrar. So that is allowed right now. So I just want to be clear that for people think that oh, this will prevent it and this will happen. Right now, a registry can purchase as many names as they want, and they can do that in their own TLD as long as they go through an ICANN-accredited registrar. So that is in the current contracts, and we haven't seen any of these harms that happen by people using registry data to purchase the domains in their own TLD. This has been allowed for years, and we haven't seen any of these, you know, potential harms or gaming that people are concerned about. So I want to be clear, because people are saying, oh, these things can happen in the future, but I want to point out what's happened in the past few years since these contracts have been around, that this gaming, these bad things haven't occurred. So I just want to point, you know, to be sure, say, hey, this is a proven history of what's happened in the past, versus, you know, assumptions of there's going to be all bad actors in the future. So I just clear on that.
Thanks, Jeff. Ken Stubbs, go ahead.
Yeah, Mikey, just one real quick comment. There were comments made over the last 2 or 3 weeks about why should we have to worry about this? We could get ICANN to prepare a draconian contract, put sanctions on anybody that commits these breaches to the extent that they could be forced to out of business, forced to divest. In the past, there have been issues that ICANN's had to deal with where they've had this option available to them, and I've had long talks over the years with many of the ICANN staffers, and they say, you know, the idea of enforcing a death penalty is just so onerous. So, I mean, you can sign on to whatever you want to sign on, make any promise you want to make, but in the past, it's just, it goes back to what Alan said about the ability to enforce. It's just incredibly difficult. And I suppose you could say that the people who are being creative have tremendous minds and been able to be incredibly creative, and it's difficult when you're dealing with potentially hundreds of registries to do this. So, I mean, that's just my own personal position then.
Thanks, Ken. Any other comments for Brian on the new version of the proposal that he posted to the list? I'm going to give it a little bit more time for people to stick their hands up, and then, you know, we've sort of naturally swung over towards harms, and so this might be a good moment to sort of switch over to that little list of mine, but I don't want to cut Brian's time short either. Okay, I'm going to give you all a short vacation while I save a document as a PDF, because I just realized that do that for this last one. Get it up there in the workspace, and then we'll swing over to the harms discussion. Okay, there we go. It'll be up there in a minute. This is a document that I sent to the list literally a half an hour before the meeting, and I apologize for that, but sort of wanted to visit with Roberto about it before I published it. It should be up there now for you. All I did, and I want to lay down all the standard Mikey disclaimers on this, is on our call last Thursday, we had a conversation about the need to sort of zero in on the harms, et cetera, and several folks said, well, there are lists out there, and I just couldn't find it. And so I went ahead and read a bunch of the background documents for our working group that are out on the wiki. And all I did was, wherever I came across somebody mentioning a harm, I just wrote it down, and then I made them into piles. And so I mostly just wanted to walk you quickly through this document so that, and get your eyes on it, so that if I've missed any major ones that are on your mind,
we can either talk about them now, or you can just email me on the list with additional ones. The thought that Roberto brought up in his comment on the list was that we treat this not unlike the way you would treat a risk assessment, in the process being first you identify the risks, then you identify how bad they are and how likely they are to happen, and then you figure out ways that you can reduce or mitigate the risk of those things happening. And this is really just the first piece of that. It's making sure that we've got a comprehensive list. And so with that, let me just roll through this real quickly. The first part for me was splitting it into some people listed harms from continuing separation, and some people listed harms from integrating. And so I tried to put them in those two piles. And then what I did is I tried to clump them. So the first clump was sort of a clump of reduced innovation and choice and features and so on. Another clump is pricing and protecting the market. And the last clump in the separation harms was service quality or the possibility of registry failure. And then in the second half, there's a fair amount of duplication. And the reason there's duplication is because different people put the harm in a different context. So there were a whole bunch of harms that had to do with discrimination by the now integrated registrar registry, and I put those in a pile. Then there's essentially a series of sort of abusive behaviors, I guess. I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but the whole blob there about insider trading, domain tasting, front running, and the oversight issue came in that context, the stuff we were just talking about, Ken's point. And then finally, the last little bit was, the pricing kinds of harms. A different group of people said that reduced innovation and product variety would be a possibility with integrated. That's some of the duplication from the top. And then last was an industry consolidation concern. And then I started making a list of predictors of harms, but I didn't get very far on that. And so that's my little list. If people could, I don't necessarily want to spend time on the call editing, but if folks could critique this on the list, this doesn't even have a version number on it, it's so draft, and then we can flesh this out a bit and carry on the conversation. Okay, we got two folks in the queue, Ken first, and then Jeff Eckhaus. Ken?
Yeah, thanks, Mikey. First of all, I hope you won't be offended, but I'm going to treat this as how I see it, and that is just a compendium of things that have popped up that you put on a piece of paper, because I can't necessarily agree with it. I don't want this list to have too much credibility until it's been thoroughly vetted. Because anybody who's going to tell me that over the last 12 or 13 years that we haven't had innovation in the DNS with a system that pretty well had this separation is, in my opinion, blowing a lot of smoke. So to tell me that all of a sudden we have to make radical changes in the system in order to be able to give people the ability to innovate, anybody wants to make that argument to tell me, needs to tell me, what would you do to innovate that would be different under one structure versus the other one? I'm sorry, people don't just suddenly get smart or get dumb depending on the ownership percentage or the relationship there. That's just my own personal opinion there.
You never have to worry about offending me about stuff that I write, because I have no editorial pride at all. Basically, I went through just all those documents that are sitting on the wiki, and wherever anybody said something, I wrote it down. So there you go. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep. Can hear you fine.
Okay. So, you know, I'm sort of in agreement with Ken as well, saying, you know, that we have to sort of vet these out, because a lot of these are, you know, I think, you know, they are potential harms, but I think I'll go, you know, it's the same thing with, I think it was McKelly said, hey, you know, should we outlaw paper clips because, you know, somebody could die from it, so it's a potential harm. What, you know, so I think some of these that are in here, they do need to be vetted out and be thought up of, because some of them occurred anyway. Like domain tasting happened. That's on the list. That had nothing to do with co-ownership. Front running, that was another thing that had nothing to do with co-ownership. And I'm not even sure that occurred, but that, you know,
right,
that, those sorts of things are not symptoms of, you know, directly related to co-ownership or vertical integration. So I really want to be clear about that. And things like access to data, or like, you know, DNS lookup data or NX domains, registries go out and sell that now. I mean, they're saying, oh, the co-owned registrar will have that. But you can go out and buy it right now. So I just want to be clear, what are the differences? You know, of course, everything is a potential harm. So I want to say, you know, I think these need to be vetted out versus putting them down just on this list, because I agree, innovation, if we don't have co-ownership, does it mean there'll be no innovation? I don't believe so, but so I think we just need to sort of vet these out a little bit more. But I do like the idea of having this list and to start going through it, and then we could say, okay, what can we do to mitigate these harms and to enhance the benefits? Because as we all know, we're not going to reduce every single harm, and we're not going to bring through every single benefit with a decision we make here.
Right. And again, to emphasize, there's really a step in the middle. First, there's the list of them all. And we've got to start at that. Then there's, as you say, the vetting that says, you know, A, are these real? B, how likely are they to happen? C, how big is the impact? And once that's done, then we can start to talk about the need to mitigate and how to mitigate and all that. But in order to get started, you need a list, and then it could well be that some of the things on the list are just plain wrong, and I think that it's useful to document that. Alan, you're next.
Yeah, I guess at some level I object to the concept of the list, and I'll tell you why. If you look at the list of harms right now, we have ones that are listed in any book, any economy textbook of the classic harms that come in the market, and a bunch of very, very specific domain ones that have already happened. I don't think we are really good at identifying what I mentioned in the chat is really innovation. If you look at something which I'm not claiming is a harm, but it was a change in the marketplace, and that is the registrar's changing of registration agreements to be able to take over an auction or sell a domain instead of deleting it, which suddenly popped up in 2004, I believe. No one had thought about it before, and completely changed the aftermarket, the market for resale of domains. And whether it's a harm or not, one can have a nice discussion about, but it completely changed the dynamics, and we're not really good about identifying those, and certainly not about identifying whether there are harms or not until way after the fact. So I think the onus, to a large extent, is on evidence or indication that something is not likely to cause harms, as opposed to try to identify the extensive list of harms that one might be able to come up with. And what I'm proposing isn't a fail-safe project either, but I think is more reasonable than trying to have the exhaustive list of harms.
All right.
Brian,
you're next. Yeah, go ahead.
I think Brian's trying to get in.
Brian?
Go right ahead, Ron. I'll follow. It's fine.
Okay, so then if I understand, I'll go forward, and then this is Ron, and then it'll be followed by Brian.
Right.
I actually come in on the other side of what Alan just said, and that I would suggest we continue to build this list. In the meantime, I saw that Jeffrey Newman had sent through a bunch of links. We can go through those. The idea here is build, in my view, an exhaustive list of harms. We can color code them. I think Jeff Eckhouse is onto something. Let's not confuse the let's separate the wheat from the chaff here. But I think that having an exhaustive list of harms is a valuable thing in any case. So why don't we color code those that are not VI or co-ownership issues? So it means that we'll be looking at one color that was all VI co-ownership issues that we can bring to the table, we can conceive of. And at the same time, anything that's historic, that's been out there, that has been a harm, we've put that in a different color. So it's quite clear where that one belongs. But at least it's an exhaustive list of harms as far as we can see them. And then we'll be able to weigh the evidence at the end of the day, what the harms are looking like out there versus what's the benefit that it's going to bring. At least we can address the issue of harms as opposed to having this thing hanging out there like a cloud that nobody wants to look at specifically. Thank you.
Okay, Ron. Brian, you're next.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a couple points, and I'm not necessarily commenting on the validity of this list one way or the other, but with a couple points that Jeff Eckhouse made, we look at front-running and we say that had nothing to do with cross-ownership. The point is that was one registrar allegedly engaging in that practice. If that registrar had access to registry data, the efficiency and the scope of the front running, which would have been an order of magnitude greater. And that's the point that we've been trying to make throughout. And secondly, if there are registries out there offering all of their lookup data on the market, that doesn't mean they should be, and that doesn't mean it's consistent with ICANN policy. I think in general, probably there is some value in us trying to continue to flesh out this list, but I would have reservation about pointing to it as a concrete addition to the analysis. Maybe it can be just for informational purposes. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. Michael Plage.
Yes, thank you. Ron, you've been, I think, rather critical on the list and another four regarding some of the actions of Treliance, and I believe they're one affiliate company who went through an ICANN accredited registrar and registered over 100,000 names. You've been critical of that, as well as some people within the IPC, so you're not alone there. My question to you there, and this maybe ties back into Jeff's question, is let's just say that is a harm. Is the restriction of up to 15% going to stop that harm? I don't see that being the case, because what happened there is Treliance actually used an affiliate reseller. It didn't even use its own registrar to engage in that activity. So I'm just trying to, again, assess, when we're trying to come down with harms, what harms are truly associated with a co-ownership or vertical integration?
Well, this is Ron. Thanks for the question, Mike. I think the answer to the question is let's do the analysis. There's nothing I can tell you today that's going to solve this, but I think if we spend our time focusing on it, write up everything we can possibly conceive of, then we will get a sense of it. At the end of the day, the biggest issue here going forward is how ICANN maintains its integrity in a world of hundreds of new top-level domains. And the only way that's going to happen is through some mechanisms that will be in the hands of compliance to force the bad actors to get out of the game and make sure that the good actors are following the right path. So this is where it begins and ends for me, and I think that anything, whether it's 15% or 50% or 100%, that number is going to be determined by a group mind, and ultimately that's what consensus is all about. But the bigger issue is how do we make sure that those that we are addressing this going forward, because right now ICANN is 11 years old. That means all of the guys who've been gaming the system have got 11 years experience, the real gamers, the guys who've been out there from the beginning milking the cow as much as they can. So if, in fact, they've got this great experience and we're about to open up the doors, we have to look at the other side and say how is that equation going to be balanced. So that's where I'm coming from. In terms of identifying as many possible ideas that we can think about as gaming possibilities would be a good exercise for this group.
But I guess my question is, Rod,
It's not a 15, it's not a 20. The gaming that you've talked about occurred with zero cross-ownership because it occurred through a reseller. I think this was the point Jeff was trying to make is, okay, if we really want to if we're about protecting harms, I think it's much more important or much broader than cross-ownership and vertical integration. This is something Alan and myself, I think with this was in the whole Pendar group, the role of resellers, right? So if, in fact, if we want to really protect registrants and look at the entire ecosystem, it's much more broader than just co-ownership and vertical integration. And then this goes to Ken Stubbs' point of, if we're worried about compliance, there's no way we're going to be able to sit there and handle the hundreds of thousands of resellers that are in the ecosystem. So, again, I just want to make sure that, if we're really tackling the issues, we're not just making red herrings out of certain aspects of and hanging a tag on it as, this is a vertical integration. Because, again, the harms that you've previously cited it happening in Treliance has nothing to do with vertical integration or co-ownership. It happened through a reseller.
This is Ron, and just one quick rebuttal, if I might, Mike.
Yeah, and then I think we got to draw this to a close. Go
ahead, Ron. Say that all we're trying to do is to draw out in this dialogue. I agree with you, Mike. That the 15% issue was not the issue. The question was about harm. The question was asked about what are all these harms? The waste of time talking about them. And I said, let's start to address harms. Now, that you can call that one not relevant, and that's fine. But all I am saying is that there's the key for us right now is to make sure that we find a formula that allows as much innovation, but with appropriate protection mechanisms in place. Thank you.
Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, all. This sounds like maybe another drafting opportunity for proposal advocates. This was a pretty tasty discussion in which I heard actually a fair amount of agreement. And sort of the way that I described to Michael the last time, maybe some language that provides a mechanism, not necessarily to address any specific harm, because we probably won't have the time to actually develop that between now and Brussels, but a mechanism whereby something can happen if one is identified would be a useful thing to have in each proposal. And so that's the way I'm going to wrap that one up. I don't want to take any more debate because we're out of time. Thanks all for the call today. I think actually we covered a fair amount of ground. For those of you working on proposals, I commend you as always and keep working, keep converging, keep talking. Thursday's call is likely to be pretty lively. We're going to have a lot of information that we don't have now, like the specific language from the DAG. And so I look forward to seeing you all then. And with that, I'm going to draw this call to a close. Thanks again.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thanks, all.
Thanks, Mikey.
Thank you.